to the Raucous Caucus. I am Mark Levine with
Garland Nixon.
There you go, Terry DeKester and Garland Nixon. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus. We do have lots to talk about. Terry, I'm going to let you go first today.
Well, I got two topics. I'll start with the big one. And the big one, of course, is basically the end of America. And it's not gloom and doom, it's just reality.
Do you really need another topic after that, Terry?
Not really, but it's all part of the same picture. But it's partly, we're becoming a slow motion Egypt. Just reading about what's been happening in Egypt, the key thing is when people lose total faith in their government, everything begins to collapse. And that's what's happening in America. We have lost faith in our government.
So the Muslim Brotherhood's taking over?
You and I, Garland and Mark, we even contribute to that in a sense because we, of course, complain on the progressive end. Everybody else complains, not everybody else, but the right wing, of course, complains on their end. The net result of all of the chatter and the corruption and everything else is Americans have really, truly lost faith in their government. And once that happens, you are in a dangerous situation. And ironically, of course, in America, probably the only thing that Americans supposedly have faith in is their military, which is not unlike sort of what goes on in Egypt, at least for one part of it.
Although
the military gets stronger. So my question to you guys is, and it's a big, big, big question, how the heck can we restore some kind of faith in our government so that people get involved and care about what's happening?
Well, I have to think about how we got here in the first place. I mean, it seems to me that the people elected gridlock, that when the in 20, what is it now, 2012, when the election, the people voted for the president of Obama, and they voted for a Democratic Senate, and the majority of the people voted for the House of Representatives, as we know, voted for the Democrats. But because of the way the Republicans drew the lines, that meant that the Republicans' minority is still in control of the House of Representatives, and that's gridlock. I mean, that's been around since 2010.
I think it goes back further than that. It goes all the way back to when good old Ronald Reagan, and probably goes back before that, but when Ronald Reagan announced that government is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Rush Limbaugh joined the parade, and probably the most destructive person in America.
Yeah, he shouldn't be in parades. He could be afloat, but he really shouldn't talk.
No, yeah, right.
But I could see him being pulled like, a gas bag, sort of by long cords up in the air floating. It's a scary thought, but I think it would work.
If we could have eliminated, sounds harsh, but all way back when, it might have actually helped. But, whether or not it's a question of election.
We are not advocating any violence here. We are simply advocating a practical. No, what are we advocating?
take away his golden mic. That's
okay.
But, the question really is not just a political, because even if people did vote for Obama and for, a Democratic Congress, et cetera, it doesn't matter. They still do not express any faith in government. Periodic periods of hope, but no faith. And if we don't have that, we don't have democracy.
Well, I will, for a change, say something. I will express some hope.
Hope!
As dire as the situation, this week, I guess, Terry's probably doom, and I'm not as bad, so I'll be gloom.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah. Gloom and doom, for those who are new listening to the show, Terry and I, we alternate as to who is gloom and who is doom.
Right, I'll be Pollyanna.
Yeah.
And I am the doctor of reality.
I'm still the optimist. But go ahead. You found a sliver of hope, have you, Garland?
Here's the problem. It's always darkest before the dawn. I think that things have really fallen apart. And in my humble opinion,
it's also darkest before midnight. But go ahead.
It's also darkest when the hurricane's about to hit.
That's right.
Everybody's going to get wiped out. But what I think is this. The reality is if we look in the short term, we are really screwed because we have some reactionaries in government and what they react to, you can argue, but the bottom line is they're determined to stop what they see as the destruction of America in their twisted little logical mind. However, if we start projecting, which is a short period of time, 10 to 15 years out, the right wing is finished in this country. The young people, you know, the people, you know, under 30 don't buy into the anti-gay, racism and xenophobia. They don't buy into all of that. The older part of the party is getting less and less. There are more minorities. So there are people who, but the bottom line is this. There are more people who don't buy into their policies moving into the voting booth than moving out. And 10 years, by say 2024 to 2028, the Republic, I don't care how they draw the line, they are finished. So that's a good thing. And I believe we'll get everything we want after that. But meanwhile, climate change will probably wipe us out anyway. So whoever's left will be in pretty good shape.
Well, I mean, your point, though, about drawing the lines, this is why the minority stays in power. This is how a minority stays in power. You could argue that in South Africa, all they really did was draw the lines. The white drew the lines so that they could vote, and the blacks couldn't vote. In fact, they even allowed some tiny amount of votes for, I think, what they call the colored or the mixed or the Asians. Whatever it is, it's all about determining who has power. And in Texas, for example, you've got a white minority. The state is only 45% white, but it used to be the majority. The whites used to be the majority. And so now they have drawn the line so this 45% controls 70%. And as we all know, when you control 30%, you control nothing at all because it's majority rule. So it will take a lot of time because a majority doesn't rule in America. We're going to have to get 60-65% before we can overcome the game playing that the Republican Party is doing. And meanwhile, I think the country will descend into a certain, Jimmy Carter, but a certain kind of malaise as we recognize that a minority is holding up what the majority of Americans want.
Let me contradict you on many points, gentlemen.
Please do, Terry. Please do.
But one, Jimmy Carter did not say malaise, by the way. That was brought in by the media. He did never use that word.
Okay.
So we can't blame him for that.
Well, you were around then. So,
yes,
you know.
Yes, I was. I was around when Reagan was. I was around when the country was founded.
Yes, we know. We know. John Adams, however, did use the word malaise, but
yes,
we weren't there.
Twice. I remember it very distinctly. It was
fair enough.
The moment he was drunk, everybody else in the Congressional Congress.
Actually,
was.
John Adams did not drink. Did you know that?
Why? He was drunk. I can't explain. Anyway.
That was Ben Franklin. You confused the two. All right, go ahead.
Okay. The real problem, there's two real problems in America. First,
only
is,
two?
Only two.
That's pretty good. We've narrowed it down to two.
Yeah.
That's a good sign.
Well, the one, of course, is our culture of, you know, me first, and which still exists to the nth degree, and all that matters is about is me, and which, of course, is fed by the commercial advertising, et cetera.
All that matters is you, Terry?
No, not me.
Oh, you just said me.
No, me, is a very compassionate guy that worries about everything.
I see. I just want to know who's on first, but never mind. Go ahead, please.
Right. But the real misunderstanding in America is who has the power. And as you and I know, and we document time after time after time, it is the private wealth and the private industries. It is the private companies that have the power. Government is not the problem. The problem is private industry and the control that it has over our government. And how we convince people of that, I don't know, besides keep on yelling. It's not the government that's flawed. It's those who control the government, be it the pharmaceutical, the insurance companies, the oil companies, et cetera, the conglomerate food companies, Monsanto, et cetera. That is the problem.
See, I think
our system.
And I'm going to take an alternate perspective, because we always talk about the government being flawed. We think it's flawed because it doesn't work for us. In reality, it's working like a well-oiled machine. The people who put things together, they have this thing working exactly like they want it to work. So the government not working is only from the perspective of who it's not working for. There are those who would say, man, this thing is really flowing. We are making a killer. I mean, if you're in the top 3%, you got like 97% of the wealth.
See,
you're not going to say it's not working for you.
I think both the government and private industry is flawed. I think they're both flawed. I think that in any political system, there's always a battle between the government and between the wealthy. And in our case, it's being skewed toward the wealthy. But because the wealthy control the government, they're both flawed. And to me, as long as you can explain to people, hey, there's two great powers in any society, right? There's the government, you know, and the military is part of the government. And there's private industry, particularly the wealthy. And the whole goal is to have them both, you know, restrain and watch each other. We wouldn't want an all-powerful government. We certainly don't want an all-powerful private industry. We need the government to regulate them. And we need the people to control the government. So I just think when people realize that, that when Ronald Reagan says the government is the enemy or the government is the problem, that means that he wants full dictatorial power to wealthy interests in the United States. But if you gave no power to people with money, if it were all, if there were no capitalism, if the government controlled every aspect of our lives, that would be bad too. My point is that people think that the absence of government means freedom. That's not true. The absence of government means that the hierarchies already in place take over.
Yeah. Right. The less government, the more, you know, there's a given amount of power. And when the government's power decreases, it goes somewhere. Well, where it goes to are the super rich capitalists.
Yeah, the pre-existing power.
And I'll say this, not the corporations themselves. The few people who own the huge corporations, kind of almost like puppeteers, begin to get anything they want. We're looking now, particularly on the right, where you've got people like Sheldon Adelson. You've got people who own a presidential candidate, literally own a presidential candidate.
Yeah, he owned Newt Gingrich.
And one other little thing that, that kind of makes the point here that I'm concerned about, and that is, again, the power of private industry. As you have probably heard, you know, in the last 6 months, 97% of the jobs, of the new jobs in the last 6 months, are part-time jobs. And so that, and the reason many people are blaming this is Obamacare and the simple ruling, you know, that below a certain number of employees, you don't have to provide any insurance for them, period. And so my question to you guys, which I think exemplifies the problem with our government, is who the hell wrote that idiotic thing into the law that less than 30 employees, you don't have to buy insurance? That is a perfect out for every industry in the country.
I don't really, so I would say I don't think that that really is it. I think that these companies are looking for any excuse to screw over their employees. Let me give you an example.
Sure.
Not long ago, the NFL said, you know, they've got people who actually work for the NFL headquarters. And they said, and the referees, et cetera, and they said they're going to get rid of their pension. They all have pensions. And they're going to give them a 401k. And, of course, they all protested. And when they said, why? They said, well, that's the trend now, basically. And I forgot it would save them, like, many, many millions of dollars. It's not that they needed more money. I mean, God knows NFL has a license to print money. But it was now in our society, we can screw our employees over and make more money. And, hey, that's quote, trend now.
Well, it is the trend. It is the trend. There was a rise of unions from, you know, the 1920s to the 1950s, and this is the fall. And the irony is that these players are very well represented. There are players' unions. They do have agents, and yet apparently it's still happening. So
no,
think,
not the
think how much.
Not the players.
Oh, not the players.
People, the civilian individual employees who work, you know, like at the
they don't have unions.
Whether they were clerks or attorneys or, you know, that work for the actual league itself as various types of employees.
The people selling hot dogs in the stadium.
You guys are missing my question here, which means you probably don't have an answer, which really discourages me. Now I may go into gloom. You know, that is who put that. That one law.
Oh, I can answer that question, Terry.
It had to be private industry. It had to be some kind of money power that put that in.
The answer is
that is really going to screw it up.
The answer is,
and every company that I have checked with, and I've checked with a number of them, is trying to find ways to go strictly to part-time employees.
The answer is that in order to get 60 votes to overcome a filibuster, and remember, there's been more filibusters under President Obama than all U.S. presidents put together in American history combined.
Really?
Yeah, that's absolutely. There's been more than 400. If you look at, like, the whole 1800s, there were less than 10. And then, like, 1900, 1950, there were maybe 20. And now there's been 440. Every single vote became a filibuster, which, of course, has never happened before in American history. It's brand new. But in order to overcome a filibuster, the Democrats needed 60 votes. And in order to get 60 votes, they had to get every last Democrat on board. And you may recall there was only a six-week period when there ever were 60 Democrats in the Senate. And they needed Ben Nelson, who was a conservative Nebraskan, who is, you know, no longer in the Senate, but frankly, his politics reflect his states and are more conservative than the vast majority. And so what they had to do is they had to say there was some number under which the corporations would not have to provide health care. And, you know, I'd prefer that number be 5 or 0. But, you know, Republicans argued it should be 100, and they came down to 30 in good old horse trading compromise. It's not a pretty answer, but it is the actual answer.
Well, my suggestion is that actually it was probably the Chamber of Commerce,
probably
one of the most strongest lobbyist groups in the country. It was the Chamber of Commerce that pushed that through. And again, a classic example of who controls the government. It's not you and me. It is the Chamber of Commerce, and it is private industry.
Well, the three of us have long said that the problem with Obamacare is that it doesn't go near far enough. If there were simply universal health care, and all of us could just get health care by, I don't know, going to the doctor, showing an ID card, and saying, hey, give us health care, then we wouldn't have to worry about things like 30 employees or any of that silliness. We'd all just have health care. And, you know, you could say that it's not going to work, except for the fact that it works in some 35 countries, all of whom live longer than we do, all of whom spend way less than we do on health care. And don't tell me, whenever I say this, I hear people say, but the Japanese eat better than we do. You know what? They probably do. But I don't think the Canadians do. They're not very different from us. I dare say you could not tell the difference between an American and a Canadian unless they told you about something. They do it very well and for much cheaper cost. And I don't know why, you know, that, the Republicans keep throwing out a couple horror stories about Canada whenever they can think of them. But these anecdotal evidence, because the vast majority of Canadians like their health care.
I make the point, and I don't think we can. Well, hold on, one at a time.
Garland hasn't talked in a while. Go ahead.
I make the point, and I think, you know, not that it, you know, there's anything you can do about it, but the point I want to make is, and it is one of the issues now, is, you know, one of the oldest problems that America, you know, America's old problem is always creeping up to bite it in the butt, and that's the issue of race. You know, I firmly believe that a lot of the Tea Party movement and a lot of the right-wing movement that's, you know, based in the South, in a deep Southern culture, is a reaction to a black president. And I think that I keep hearing these Tea Party members say, we've been sent to stop President Obama, so much so that the Tea Party has no concern with governing the country. They have no concern with what's right or wrong or good for bad for the economy. It is a laser-like focus on attacking and doing everything they can to thwart a guy who I think they don't ever want to acknowledge as the President of the United States. And I think one of the things we do as a country is we try our best to ignore the issue of race whenever we can, but I think it's there.
That's a nice segue, actually, to my topic, which is how the Republican Party is falling apart. But, Terry, I know you wanted to say something. Go ahead.
Well, just, you know, I think we've got to, you know, rally the troops, not the troops, but the citizens. And, you know, what people have to realize is they should really be marching against the lobbyists. They should be marching against the Chamber of Commerce. They should be marching against pharma and all these large organizations that are essentially lobbyist organizations. That's where their protest has to be directed, because they are the ones who control the government.
But Terry, for every 10 lobbyists we hate, and I do hate at least 10 lobbyists, there's one we love, right? I mean, there are lobbyists that help, they want to protect the environment. There are lobbyists that want to protect a woman's right to choose. There are lobbyists. For every 10 causes you hate, you will find, I dare say, one lobbyist who supports a cause that you care about. So,
well, let me put it this way. If you were going to march against, you know, say the ACLU, you're not going to get a very big march because they don't have very big offices. If you're
no,
going to march,
but they do have lobbyists on the Hill. Not many, but they got a few.
If you're going to march against pharma, it's a big building. You can surround it with 100,000 people and still not have enough people. You know, so I mean, it's the big guys that you have to go after and realize. And it is, as you pointed out, it's about a 10-to-1 ratio on who has any lobbying power.
Here's how I'd make the distinction, all right? Lobbyists funded by individuals, in other words, people who care about the Constitution, give to the ACLU. People who care about legalization of marijuana, give to the Marijuana Policy Project. People who care about abortion, give to either pro-choice groups or pro-life groups. In fact, as much as I hate the National Rifle Association, I have to recognize that it's mostly individuals, although there are some gun manufacturers, but mostly individuals given to the NRA. But when it comes to Big Pharma, what you have is not people. There aren't individuals giving to Big Pharma. It's not like someone says, I want my drug costs to cost more. No, what you have is corporate money. In other words, when you buy drugs that you use to sustain your life, you are giving money to people who are making, who are lobbying Congress to make the cost of your drugs more expensive. They are using money from you, the consumer, who needs this drug to live, so you can't very well say, so I will not get this life-sustaining medicine. I'll show you. It's very hard to boycott life-sustaining medicine. So, but then they use that money to actually make the cost of your drugs go up. They use that money against you. So I would argue there's a big difference between individuals. When they give, they're funneling money into things they support. Whether I support them or not, these individuals support those causes. Very, very different from corporations using people's money against them. And that's why I and we have long argued against Citizens United that corporations should not be allowed to give donations. Individuals can give whatever they want.
The other thing about we're missing when we talk about lobbyists is this. You know, lobbyists are just there, and the Congress members really don't have it to listen to them. They don't, you know, the lobbyists, I don't think, are the problem. If you ask yourself, why? Why would a member of Congress pay any attention to a lobbyist? Who cares? What's in it for them? Here's the reason. Because these big corporations donate big money to these super PACs, because they donate the real
to the campaigns.
The lobbyists. Is when they say, basically say to a member of Congress, if you don't vote the way we want, we will stop donating millions and millions of dollars to the super PACs that support your party. We'll stop having these fundraisers for you. So in reality, it's not the lobbyists that are even doing anything wrong. It comes back to the lobbyists are connected to those who have the authority to cut off the money. Once again, what to get back to? A system where it takes so much to get elected that the only person that can get elected is the person that has the connections to the powerful people who can provide that money for.
And sometimes it's just pure greed. I mean, look at the Virginia governor. He wasn't even using it for his election. He was promoting this nutritional supplement manufacturer. By the way, nutritional supplement, this guy is basically telling people to eat tobacco and saying it's good for you. Needless to say, the FDA has not approved his statement. But he claims that let's just say I'm skeptical that eating tobacco is good for you. But all right, that's his claim. He got the governor to push his claim. In return, he paid for the governor's daughter's wedding. He paid for the governor's Rolex watch. He paid for his wife to get all these things and loans, hundreds of thousands of dollars in loans. Basically, bribery is legal in America today.
Yes.
And all I have to do is look at my home state governor to see that, oh, yeah, getting paid to do legislation, that apparently is the way it is in America.
So I've lost all faith in government.
That's my point. It's not just that the big business is bad. Government is bad, too, because they're one and the same.
But how do we correct it?
How do we correct it?
The point I was making earlier before the show started was this. Government,
before the show started?
Yes.
That's
I
not
think.
Fair.
I don't know. But at any rate, the problem with a divided government, I believe government is a mirror of the society.
Yes.
I believe, an example, when the Republicans looked at their presidential candidates and said, my God, how can we get such horrible candidates? How come we can't get a decent candidate? I said, you're looking in the mirror and you don't like what you see. You got a screwed up party.
Yeah.
Right now, if you look at our foreign policy, which is aggressive, and we're attacking people in drones and helicopters, blowing people up, and then you come back to the streets of America and we're shooting each other on a daily basis. Our foreign policy and our domestic policy reflects our society. The problem is not the government. The problem is a screwed up society.
Yeah, but how do you fix it?
But it's kind of a
that was Terry's
cycle.
Question. How do you fix it, Garland?
I don't know. That's not what I'm here for.
Oh, you just here to tell us the problem.
The problem.
I'll tell you what. I want you gentlemen to think about it because I don't have any easy answers either. So you have 1 minute. We're going to take a quick commercial break. You have 1 minute to figure out how to solve all the problems in our government and in humanity. All right? I'm giving you a full minute.
Easy.
That should be plenty of time. So we'll be right back with more of the Raucous Caucus. If you want to join in and give your solution, we'd like to hear from you at 202-889-9797. 202-889-9797. This is Mark Levine, Garland Nixon, and Terry DeKessler. We are the Raucous Caucus, and we'll be right back right after. Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. This is Mark Levine, and apparently there's a conversation that's already underway between between Terry DeCastor and...
I'm thinking I'm going to use a false name because I just said the words backpack and pressure cooker, and I think that's going to be dragged away. Yes.
Well, luckily you were not on the air when you said that.
Alfred E. Newman, how's that?
You probably shouldn't have admitted that. That, of course, is Garland Nixon. We are the Raucous Caucus. I have given Terry and Garland a fairly simple assignment, simply to solve all of this nation's problems, tell us how to take back the government, end the corruption and culture of violence in America, and give us peace and harmony throughout the world. I gave them a full 60 seconds to solve this problem. Garland, you first.
I defer to Terry. I came up with more problems.
Terry, your answer.
Yes, I have the solution.
Oh, good. I've been waiting
America
for this. Yes,
may
please.
Not like it, but that's tough. You know, it's going to have to be a tough choice, guys, because basically we've devolved into a society where opinion is the only thing that matters. Nobody has to understand facts. Nobody has to do any research. Nobody has to think. All they have to do is express an opinion. So my solution, gentlemen, which I know this is going to be hard, but is kill the damn Internet.
Kill the Internet?
Yeah. Just wipe it out.
That's your solution.
That's it. Just get rid of it.
It's a series of tubes. You would plug the holes.
That just get rid of it entirely. Yeah.
That's your answer.
Yep.
Well,
let me guess, Terry, and you want us to get rid of, to go back to horse and buggies?
Yeah.
You know, if we lived like the Amish, we'd probably kill less people.
Mark, he's trying to take us back to the 5th century. I think Terry actually has become a member of the Tea Party.
No, I think Terry is just remembering the days he grew up and wants us to go back there.
I get a little further, yes, because back in the days of horse and buggy, of course, people then were only informed by facts and knowledge and science.
I see.
Opinions didn't matter.
Right, and there was no violence in the Old West or in slavery times, or as if people truly knew what was going on during the Spanish-American War or any of the others, for that matter.
What you had there back then, Mark, was good old-fashioned American ignorance.
There you go. Yeah. There was the Know-Nothing Party. At the 1830s, I believe, President Millard Fillmore wanted to run again, and they, of course, everybody hated blacks, but they also hated immigrants and Catholics, and their belief was that we need to know nothing, that intellectualism,
okay,
that knowledge is bad.
Solution, guys, I have a better solution since you don't buy that one.
All right, because we gonged that one. Try again, Terry, try again.
Here's the better solution.
Strike one.
Remember that during the Revolutionary War, which I was there,
right?
You know, and George Washington...
I can't imagine you were a minute man. I can imagine maybe you were an hour man.
Hour man, yeah, an hour man.
Because you're, you know... All right,
yeah,
go ahead.
When I was working with George...
Yeah.
You know, those guys felt that King George, as a matter of fact, was the best king they ever had. So, obviously, the solution is to become a colony of England as we were originally intended to be.
Ah.
I never thought about that.
Yeah.
No, we can't because Garland doesn't like the monarchy. We had this whole discussion.
Yeah, okay. But the monarchy doesn't really do anything. They just take money.
That's true. But
that
offends Garland.
You would have
better. I got a better idea, Mark.
All right, I'm waiting, Garland. I'm waiting
Uruguay,
for this brilliant idea here.
Uruguay, the country of Uruguay,
yeah,
just completely legalize marijuana. In every way, you can grow it, you can sell it, you can whatever industry, it'll be taxed. Look, they did the wise thing. Let's become a colony of Uruguay.
No. Gentlemen,
no.
You haven't heard my solution yet. Mine is better than both of y'all's, of course. If you'd only thought of it. It's very simple. There is a nation that's quite similar to ours, that has universal health care, that has a working political system, that has a functioning democracy, and when we become part of them, when we become a province of them, we won't even have to change the maps very much because they border us. It is Canada. We need to let Canada take over the United States and simply submit to the Canadian system, and then we can have a huge North American presence. By the way, we'll be all the way from the Mexican border up to the Arctic Lake, the Arctic, you know. It's not ice anymore, so it's basically the Arctic, you know, waterfront, which it is. And we'd all be one nation, and we simply go under the Canadian system. With their very careful, I think, correct mixture of capitalism and socialism, and it solves all our problems.
Everywhere.
It solves all our problems. I win. Best solution, I think.
We'll have decent gun laws.
Right. Decent gun laws. Gay civil rights. We'd have decent abortion laws. Race relations are much better in Canada than they are in America.
Okay, so then we can do like Canada and Australia. They're still part of the Commonwealth of England. but they don't really give a damn about the monarch.
Well, Garland's not going to approve of this baby. He's baby hating on the young prince. We've had this long discussion.
Mark, we have plenty of moose head beer.
That's true. And you know, basically, a very peaceful, polite people.
Yeah, when's the last time Canada used drones to blow somebody up? I can't remember.
I don't think recently. No, I don't think there was an example. But I mean, Canada is not a complete pacifist. They fought in World War II. So, you know, the answer is simply...
They're in Afghanistan.
We'll simply let the Canadian people determine our government. We'll just join Canada. And
but you do realize that their current prime minister is right wing.
Yeah, but he's hasn't he been involved in some scandals? He's going to be knocked out soon.
Well, of course. What politician isn't involved in scandals? It's the age of Wiener.
But plus, oh, that's a scary, scary thought.
Yeah, really? The age of Wiener.
We are living in the age of Wiener. Wow.
Age, yes.
That's a memorable phrase. not one that I really want to say, but all right. Here's the thing, though. Canadian right winger. It's well to the left of our Democratic Party.
I was going to say that. Compared to the Tea Party, he's Dennis Kucinich.
Yeah, no, a Canadian right winger. Remember, a Canadian right winger supports universal health care. A Canadian right winger. Wrap your mind around that one, if you can. I want to talk about our right wing in America.
The thing that we have to keep in mind, you know, is that while we lament the dysfunction of our government and our society, we do have to keep something in mind, and that is this, and Mark makes a very strong point.
Mark does?
The problem in our society
is
that we are being ruled by a minority.
That's right.
A right-wing, authoritarian, angry minority wants control of everything, doesn't want to share power. What we have to do in our country is we have to find a way to distribute power evenly so that we're not ruled by such a minority. The fact of the matter is, if it weren't for that small right-wing cabal that's yanking our government and our country around, we could actually have some decent laws that would prevent a tiny minority of wealthy people from getting all the money while everybody else sucks.
That's actually a great segue to my next topic, which is talking about the angry right-wing minority that's controlling our country. Because luckily, it's falling apart. We've seen just this week, we've seen Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, who is weirdly a moderate in today's Republican Party, even though he destroyed New Jersey's unions. He's actually considered too moderate to win election for president, though I'm sure he's running. And he was complaining about the libertarian wing of the party by Rand Paul. And what's fascinating is that the wings are mad at each other for precisely the things that I think make them worst, right? So Christie is saying to Rand Paul, don't protect people's liberties. I disagree with Rand Paul on 90% of things that man says. But the 10% I agree with him on is I don't think the government should be spying on us without a warrant, because I believe that the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution requires a warrant and probable cause before they, find out who we're calling and all those things. So I agree with Rand Paul on that. That was the thing that made Chris Christie mad. And what's fascinating is that vote. The weirdest coalition you ever did see between a young Republican Tea Party guy named Amash and the vanguard of the progressive movement in Congress, John Conyers, and they joined together and came within four votes. It was 215-7. If four votes switch, it'd be a tie. They came within four votes of actually ending the government spying on the American people. A shocking thing. And what's fascinating was the coalition, because it was a majority of Democrats, but about 40% of Democrats voted for the spying, and it was about 60% of Democrats and 40% of Republicans joining together and coming this close to stopping the policy. So what
our
I
man,
find
our
is...
Our man Conyers was actually working with Paul?
No, it was working with a guy like Paul. Yeah, Paul's in the Senate. This was
that scares me.
Congressman Amash. But the cause for which they were working is one that I think, Terry, you support. It's to end the government collection of all of our, what they call the metadata, all of who calls whom in America.
Let me put that in perspective.
All right.
Let me put that in perspective. It's a nice wish. In fact, Google, et cetera, are the real data gatherers.
Oh, absolutely.
And they gather even more information, and they use all of that information to market us, to lead us, to essentially control us in terms of what we should buy, et cetera, et cetera. You're not going to be able to destroy Google, and NSA compared to Google is amateur, and they are. It's always going to be there. That's why I'm back to, damn it, destroy the Internet.
The other part of it is this.
You didn't take me seriously on that last part.
I think it's going to be hard to uproot the Internet. I think this is something that has...
And that's the point. That's the point with Google and everything else. I mean, this exists. You're not going to be able to get away from this, from the government or from Google or from anybody else, because it exists.
Garland, make your point. Go ahead.
I was going to say that coalition isn't shocking. Let's not forget. George Bush did exactly the same thing. I had a guy named Russell Weiss on my radio show who gave up the NSA for exactly the same thing. They've been doing it for as long as they had the technology to do it and will continue as long as they have the technology to do it. But the fact of the matter is this. Those people supported it when George Bush did it. There is an element within the Republican Party, a huge element, that if the current administration is in favor of something or is doing something, they are against it. It is not shocking to me that these people supported it when Bush is doing it. And now if any Democrat, anything that the Obama's administration does, if any Democrat says, I'm against that, they say, we're with you. Well, they're not going to say why, because it's the president. But so don't be shocked when that coalition will join anyone who is against anything that the administration is doing at any time for any reason.
Well, let me give credit to the 60% of Democrats led by John Conyers who voted against the president, because what it shows is they were being consistent. These are the same people that complained when Bush did it. And
isn't that just posturing?
No, not from John Conyers. No, they opposed it when Bush did it.
You're not going to be able to eliminate it. I mean, that's
because you mean because Google has it.
Because it exists throughout the Internet, and even if they said...
Do you know who's eliminating it?
There's no way they're not doing it, because it's part of the overall picture.
Do you know who actually is?
You can't mine the information you need without mining all of the information.
Terry, do you know who is successfully fighting Google?
Who?
The European Union.
Well, I know they're fighting, but are they going to win?
I don't know if they're going to win or not, but the European Union, much like Canada...
Who gets the information? It's not you and me.
My point is there are democratic nations and entities out there with a proper mixture of socialism and capitalism, like Canada and like the European Union. European Union is probably the only group I know that has some power that's been fighting hard against the Googles of the world to protect people's privacy.
That's right.
Good for them,
That brings up the main question. I mean, in terms of national security, you have to mine the information to find out what you want to do. So if you selectively mine, you're not going to find out all the information. The only reasonable way to do it with the massive computer power that you do have is to mine everything. The needle in the haystack, the philosophy, now can work.
See, I don't think it does. Every time the government says, and I realize this is all classified and we're not allowed to know anything, but every time you press the government hard, well, how many lives have been saved? What terror plot has been stopped because of this? They'll always, they'll say, well, it's because we have this information, but then they admit, well, there was a human source that gave them some information, or there was this, they mined the information after they found out that here's the thing, if some human source or gives you some information about a terrorist plot, then you can get a warrant, and then you can go and you can look up phone numbers and everything like that. Then we could do it by the book. No one's arguing that you shouldn't be able to follow a lead where it points to a terrorist. But
given modern communication and the current state exactly is an example of this, we are supposedly in sort of an alert situation now, because of approaching the anniversary of 9/11, because of the end of Ramadan, et cetera, et cetera.
So the government 12th anniversary?
This whole big alert.
I don't know, the 12th anniversary.
A tactic, but nevertheless, the only way you can use the Internet, if you're going to use it, the same as you and I put something in Google, and we put in a topic that we want to receive in Google, and we receive tons of stuff. 90% of it isn't specific to what we want that we've Googled in, but you refine your search, and you refine your search, and you finally get what you want, supposedly. It's the same way in terms of computer technology for the government. You mine everything, you Google everything, as it were, and then you start refining it. and it's a necessary process.
I don't think we've, I think, frankly, a few more spies in selective places would do a lot better. And I'm fine, by the way, with spies in Yemen or Iran or North Korea or wherever they are. I think can gather a lot more information than trying to grab 300 million people's phone calls and then looking for a needle in that haystack.
But well, put it in one more way of reality. It's a tool of power that the government has. And when is the last time the government gave up a tool of power?
And here's the answer, Terry. By 215 to 207, with four more votes, the Congress, the complete dysfunctional, awful Congress, through a weird coalition of left and right, almost stopped this practice. That's something to remark on. Go ahead, Garland.
Yeah, Terry may be right because, you know, Mark, there are a lot of times in Congress when members of Congress will make deals and say, okay, you can vote that way because it looks good, or you can vote because they know before the vote what they have enough votes for.
Yeah, that's true. That's
true. They will allow people to vote a certain way because it helps them with their constituency.
That's a fair point.
But they've made the deal already. That it ain't going through. And I think Terry's right. I think that happened.
That may well have happened, but what it shows is that the American people... Why does it look good? It looks good because the American people don't want all this spying on us. And that's a good thing that we have... Here's the point. I don't want people to always be skeptical of government. I certainly don't. There are things that the government does well. Regulating corporations is something the government needs to do more of. The SEC needs to be stronger. Dodd-Frank needs to be stronger. But when it comes to the government itself collecting information, the government itself acting against individuals. Again, you want to act against big business, I'm fine with it. But acting against every time I call my mom, the government has a record of that. You know, maybe I shouldn't mind. It's not like, but does the government really need to know how many times I call my mother? I don't think so.
But I think Mark, the problem is with what you're saying is this. I think that this vote is misleading. Let's not forget, those same Republicans that are against it now were for it when George Bush did it.
That's true.
They're not against it, Mark. They're against the Obama administration. They are against any Democrat that's in office, and particularly the one that's in office now. So the reality of it is, it's a mistake to look at these Republicans and say it's bipartisan. No, it's not. If Mitt Romney was in right now, not one of them would vote against it. Maybe Rand Paul. That's about it.
That's true. So, but here's what I want to focus on.
Safe vote.
There is a divide that is growing, and this is where I wanted to go in the last 10 minutes. There is a divide growing, and that vote shows it. The world war of words between Governor Chris Christie and Senator Rand Paul shows it. There is a growing divide in the Republican Party between the libertarians who want absolutely no government whatsoever, good, bad, or indifferent, and the Republicans who support a big military, big subsidies for corporations kind of state. And it's growing, and they largely can't control each other. And one of the things I think, that if you want a little bit of hope, they divide and conquer, right? As people who, that's sort of an old war strategy, right? You take your enemies, you divide and conquer them. As the Republicans fight amongst themselves, this minority that is controlling the power, or at least preventing the majority from doing what they want to do, I think as they divide amongst themselves, that may give an opportunity for Democrats to finally achieve something. What do you think?
There's a lot of chatter. There is a lot of chatter if you're looking on the internet regarding Christie and Paul, et cetera, and they are calling for a third party with Paul, et cetera, leading it. And
great.
If they push that and do that, that could be good overall.
Absolutely.
It's scary, but it might be good because it would divide.
You know, for all the people that have called in to our show and said, well, we need a third party because the Democrats aren't doing what we want them to do, and we say, no, if you split the progressive left, the right wins. The same thing works in reverse. If we split the conservative right, then the progressives can win. And so I say, Christie and Paul, keep yelling at each other. I love to hear it.
The fracture in the Republican Party is a little bit different. Here's what I think. They're the mainstream Republican Party who are the capitalists, the big money people.
Right.
And then there are the authoritarian conservatives who are concerned with their social moral views.
Right.
I think that's where the split is, and this is why. The capitalists, the big money people, don't really give a crap about the social issues, and they will not sacrifice any laws, anything that's going to hurt their money.
Right.
So they could care less if they give up on abortion and all the, you know, they wanted to immigration reform. They don't care as long as they can keep power and they can make laws that will give them money. The authoritarian social conservatives, they don't care. They're the opposite. They could care less about that. They just want to make sure that they oppose what they oppose. Whether they win, lose, or draw, they're going to oppose it.
They're the Taliban of the American populace. They want religious control. They want the government to impose their religious principles on everybody.
What you guys are both saying, are you guys both saying Cuccinelli for president?
Oh, my God.
He does combine both of those wings. He does believe in showering taxpayer money on massive corporations while using the government to enforce one narrow view of religion on all of us. So he brings Republicans together.
I always say this. You're making a mistake when you call Republicans crazy. They're not crazy. They know
no.
far right wing.
I never call them crazy.
They know exactly what they want and why. Here's the issue. I think that guy really is crazy.
Yeah, well, I mean, but he represents the best and brightest of the Republican Party. Let's face it. He may well run for president someday. This may be the first time it's mentioned, but if that guy becomes governor, he will become the Republican poster child, because he's someone who combines the Taliban wing of the Republican Party with the sacrifice the poor on a platter and feed them to the rich Wall Street wing of the Republican Party.
I think
if Cuccinelli gets in power, I guarantee you the first thing he will push for is an anti-Wiener law.
Yeah. Well, that's already, he's already working on that. But
I'm not so sure I get that or want to.
Yeah, but the thing about I think is, if Cuccinelli gets in power, I think he'll collapse. I mean, look at McConnell. McConnell is collapsing. I think Cuccinelli will collapse. I think he will.
But McDonnell is
the government of Virginia up, and he will be do things so outrageous that he'll kind of Rick Scott himself, and only much worse.
Here's the thing, though. McDonnell is collapsing,
and Virginia's goal at this point is to join Texas and form one big state. That is the plan. You guys have got to be aware
of that. No, but Virginia is not Texas. Virginia is a...
Trying to be.
No, it's a purple state. It's a state that voted for President Obama twice. It's a state that is... It's solidly purple. I'm not going to call it blue. I wish it were. But it's not red either. It's definitely not Texas. And I don't see how the people can elect a crazy man like Cuccinelli. But I'll tell you how they do it.
It's all red.
If Cuccinelli wins, the reason he'll win is because the people in Northern Virginia who turned out solidly, young people and Latinos and African Americans and the voters that turned out solidly for the Democrats in 2012, it's because they don't come out, don't recognize there's an election that's coming on in just, what, 3 months? In 3 months, there's this election. And the vast majority of Virginians, I don't think, even know that it's going on or how important it is. And if they don't show up, we will have the most right-wing governor in the nation.
Yeah, it's not a purple state. I disagree with you that, because the purple, you got to blend blue and red, and there's not that blend. Northern Virginia is blue. The rest of Virginia is red.
That's true.
You know?
That's true. It's like the American flag, red, white, and blue, I guess.
Then you've got, let's not forget, there is a sizable African-American population in Virginia. I mean, you look around Virginia,
Will they vote, Garland, in 3 months? Or will they stay home because President Obama's not on the ballot? I'm very worried about that.
Right, and you and I both. And I don't even live in Virginia.
You should be.
So what?
He's
what?
A very dangerous man.
Well, I mean, do we need? I don't know, Al Sharpton. I mean, who do we? Who? President Obama? If President Obama comes down to Virginia, as by the way, I think he will in October. I think we're going to see a lot of President Obama in Virginia. If President Obama goes down to Hampton Roads and goes down to Richmond and comes out to Northern Virginia and encourages people to vote, will that dramatically increase the African American vote, Garland?
I don't know.
Really?
But I really have no idea. But I'll put it like this: the Democrats need to do everything they can to ensure that this coup doesn't get in.
Absolutely,
that's a big question, Garland. Are you saying that President Obama no longer has that kind of influence over the African American community?
Has he lost his mojo?
I mean, he holds great sway. I mean, it will make a difference. It will make a difference, no doubt about it. I'm just saying, I don't know how much of a difference. But there's no question. I think the Democrats need to pull out all the stops. I think old Billy Boy needs to go down.
Oh, absolutely.
President Obama and on and on and on.
You know, Bill Clinton may be more well-loved among African Americans than President Obama right now. Because it's
No, he's not.
Because I think people recognize that the current president of the United States is flawed, as all presidents are, and he has to make difficult choices. But an ex-president, in the glow of history, can seem all perfect. And I think Bill Clinton
He's not. He doesn't hold more sway than
Does he hold equal sway? Because people like Bill.
Yeah, I like Bill. I'm fine with Bill.
Okay, so he holds equal. Well, it'll be very interesting, of course, because Terry McAuliffe is a good friend of the Clintons and has been for years. And so it'll be interesting. You know, Bill and Hillary are going to be out in Virginia in force. I just think it's amazing to me that I bet if you polled the vast majority of Virginians, 60-70% would not realize that there is a very important election.
All the aristocratic members of Virginia, which are still many, they would agree with my idea that we should join the Commonwealth of England.
The other thing, Mark, is I wonder if...
I can't get you guys to take that seriously.
I wonder if there are people in the Republican... No, I don't wonder. I'm sure there are people in the Republican Party who are very much afraid of Cuccinelli and what he and his crazy people did, you know, the Murdochs and the rape comments and all of the people like that, knowing how they can affect the national election in 2014 and in 2016. And so I think there are probably Republicans that are afraid this guy, you know, will go over the edge and hurt the party.
That's true. Let's never forget that there is a certain percentage of the Republican Party that is still what we might call fiscally conservative and socially liberal. And they are growing. I know people that say that all the time to me. I'm fiscally conservative and socially liberal. And I don't know, maybe that's the cool thing to be. But clearly those people cannot possibly vote for a wacko like Ken Cuccinelli.
I bet you the big money is supporting Cuccinelli because the big money knows that the right wing and the Tea Partiers are pawns. And they can use those pawns to get what they want. And I think, therefore, the money will be there for Cuccinelli.
And they continue to do so. I'm sure just the Koch brothers alone can give Cuccinelli far more money than he could ever spend, even if he were to spend as much as he could. Gentlemen.
Are you guys aware of Stansberry?
What's that?
Are you aware of Stansberry?
Tell us about Stansberry. No, I'm not.
We haven't got time.
People
that have the money to control this country, and they really do. And Blum, I'm sure you're aware of Blum, who controls the getting issues to Supreme Court.
Yeah, I think Stansberry, he's a little bit of a wacko, though. The guy with the video.
Yeah, but he's advertising and playing up like he's the news thing on Huffington Post, on Apple, on AccuWeather. And they put him up there just as if it looks like news. He is a wacko, but he's a dangerous wacko with a lot of money.
Kind of like Mark.
Yeah, right.
Sort of.
I'll tell you this. We need to have a discussion, and we'll do this in future weeks. We need to have a discussion on I have all these right-wingers. I was on Fox a week ago, and all these right-wingers writing in and hating me, of course. And why they believe the most amazing, crazy things. And the psychology of why they believe that, we'll have to say for another day.
And don't worry, Mark. We still love you.
I appreciate that. Not sure I want it, but I... No, I love you both, gentlemen. We will be back next week, of course, at noon for another edition of the Raucous Caucus. Thank you, Terry. Thank you, Garland. Terry, if people want to find you, you're under a rock in Oregon somewhere. How would they do that?
No, it's a beautiful, beautiful day, and I'm enjoying every minute of it. It's doctorofdemocracy@AOL.com.
And Garland?
GarlandIn@gmail.com, at Garland Nixon on Twitter, or just Garland Nixon on Facebook.
I'm on Facebook as well.
Say where Garland is.
There you go. He's in Maryland somewhere. I am also on Facebook. Go to the Mark Levine fan page. By all means, like it. Like this show. I am also on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk. My website, where I store all of these shows, is marklevinetalk.com. Thank you again, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mark.
And we'll be back next week at noon. Coming up next is the Inside Scoop.